that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
When Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like Sweet Tarts Twisted Rainbow Ropes, Gummies Fruity Splits, and Chewy Fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine. Visit SweetTartsCandy.com to shop now.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello, and welcome to the Chels. Well, 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 what a week. 1 week, three managers. Oh, what's going to happen next week? Who knows? This is Chelsea. Joining me today to discuss the chaos theory that goes behind the blue shirts, are the illustrious Andy Saunders, the Norfolk oligarch.
How are you? Are you all right?
I'm all right, thank you very much. And Gary Hayes, who's from Royal Tunbridge Wells and is the least royal person there, I would have thought.
The help.
The help.
The royal help.
Or is that the hindrance? I never know which with you.
Both.
Both. You try to
So we're
helpful.
Recording this at some ludicrous time in the morning because you rather selfishly have to go and do something this afternoon. Tell the listeners what you've got to go and do.
Well, the village that we are associated with, and we work at the, helping their museum do some creative things and what have you, is a village called Hallerton. And they have this age-old tradition of bottle kicking, which goes on, which would have been perfect yesterday, but I think it'll be a mud bath. And it's basically two villages, the village of Hallerton and the village of Medbourne. It's been going on for centuries, where they basically get together and have an almighty scrap and have to get, it's kind of like a ball, I think it is, and bottles. I've never seen it, so I'm dying to see.
They've changed it this year, haven't they?
Oh yeah, look at you, you know your stuff.
Yeah, you are the bottle, Kerry. They're going to kick the shit out of you, hopefully.
Oh, mate. Everyone I know...
Is it like watching football in the Championship?
No, I would say it's...
It's like watching Wolves versus Chelsea.
It's lower than that. It's it used to be really, really violent. And they sort of have this place... that they have kind of like a line where they meet, which is a central point. And then it's all about travelling, I think, about a mile or so. I might have got this wrong, but distances. But it's quite a long distance that you have to go to. And they run to one end to be the winner. And a lot of injuries ensue. I think there's a lot of... you speak to people and say, oh, yeah, no, I took part. Did you break anything? Oh, only an arm or only a leg. It's that kind
did
of thing.
Did you see the Atherton ball game? You know, the footage from that when it was... like a full-on war with people, like, you know, properly getting hurt. Did you see the footage of that? I think I sent it to you.
Yeah, that was... I thought that was just a riot. It was because that's what it looked like. You know, it is quite unbelievable,
terrifying.
Really. Yeah, it really is.
And, the only rule, you know, the only rule in that game is you're not allowed to kill anybody.
Yeah. So I just wanted to confirm. It's actually a wooden barrel that is moved across a mile-long playing area in which two teams attempt to move a wooden barrel across the opposing team's stream at the far end of the area.
Why is it called bottle kicking then?
That's one of those things which I will tell you next
week. Maybe
it goes
back to the old English, where a barrel was referred to as a bottle.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That would be logical, Gary.
Yeah, that is actually, yes. The rules, there are none. The contestants aim to take the bottle from Hare Pie Bank to get it across a boundary stream for their own village.
Hare Pie Bank?
Yeah. Where they used to present a pie made of hares to the winner. So there you go. It's
a pie made of hairs. That wouldn't be very nice, would it?
Well, Gary, these are animals, which of course I don't like because I love hairs.
Too gamey.
Well, yes, they could
be. Honestly, it's all a bit Wicker Man, isn't it? You want to make sure totally. You're not going to be, you know, sort of burnt at the stake later on.
No,
as an up from London.
Hey, not the bees.
Hey, look, if that makes me a local, what the hell? Then people say, oh, you remember Kerry? Yeah, he got burnt at the stake. 2023.
You'll never be a local. I've had a place in Norfolk for 25 years then. I'm nowhere near being a local.
Yeah, but that's because you flaunt your wealth so disgustingly in the face of the locals that none of them like
the
you.
The Norfolk oligarch. Yeah. Raising house prices in Holt since 2000.
Single-handedly destroyed the economy to suit his needs. Look, he's smiling. This is what makes him happy.
It's funny because it's true.
Oh, well, don't you worry. We'll be taking that smile off your face very shortly when we
I love Norfolk and I love the people in Norfolk and I love all my neighbours, but they look at me as an up from London and they always will.
Yeah.
I don't like people from Norfolk.
Okay. Right, that's not a generalisation.
Now, if you're listening, you're a mug.
Why, Gary, have you can back that up with anything?
I'm from Cambridgeshire. We just don't like people from Norfolk.
You want to get bottle kicking together.
We see him. We'll shank him on the fens.
Shank him.
In the spirit of Herod the Wake.
Yeah. See, they always say that Norfolk's really flat. It isn't that flat. I mean, there's bits of Norfolk that aren't flat at all. But Cambridgeshire is in the fens. They're just stupidly flat.
When the sea levels rise, Andy, your house is going to be getting swum to by Kevin Costner.
No, not my house. No, I'm inland and
safe.
I think if you're in a coastal region of Norfolk, then you're more worried about the cliffs collapsing and your house falling onto the beach. But I won't. But yes, I mean it's
no. Well, there is a map when we were at school. This is what you get taught in the fens when you're at school.
How to swim?
They had a map
this
that showed like the UK. Yeah. No, no, like, oh, this is the UK now. This is what it'd be like when the ice caps melt. And you could see all of that air, that whole arse of the UK is just underwater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, the only thing I'd say, a bit of warning for you, Andy, you know, you could get flooded if you don't look after your hot tub in the garden, you know.
That's true.
Just leave it on heavy flow.
Monitor the hot tub.
Yeah, you're right. You do. How is that settled in?
I haven't got it yet.
Oh, when did you get it?
I don't know. I need to make a hard standing first.
I don't think I wish to know about that.
It's complicated, man. Getting a hot tub's complicated. You've got to make a hard standing. Then you've got to make sure that you can actually fit it down your side passage, if that's not too much of a euphemism.
Hard standings and side passages.
Because
sounds like a double bottom.
Absolutely. Quite, power bottom to me.
They're quite hefty things. And then you've got to be able to get the truck in and you've got to put the electricity in. I just thought they'd deliver it and you'd fill it out with water, but it's a pain, to be honest. There you go. Anyway, I'll be good when I'm sitting in there with my cigar.
Absolutely. Quite right. Yes. Well, there you go. And maybe take an electric radio in with you. Well, I suppose this is all lovely and it's fitting that it's a lovely Sunday wet day that we're
literally avoiding talking about football.
Okay.
It's Monday as well, Kerry.
Oh yeah, of course. Well, it feels like a Sunday to me, as it does to everyone probably today. All right, well look, let's get on with it. Let's go down that funny little path called Frank Lampard, who became our manager. We might as well start with that because, yes, we've got the Liverpool game and Bruno and everything. On the first note, with Bruno, do you think that was really hard on that guy, who is one of Potter's men, to have to manage a team which looked just like a Potter team. And then, of course, 24 hours later, they're all on gardening leave. And do you not think, wouldn't it, in these environmentally challenged times, if people are made to go on gardening leave, we should let them do gardens? I think it'd be fantastic. Be really nice. Anyway, Bruno, was it a tough call? Andy?
Yeah, of course it was. Yeah, I mean, they basically threw him a sort of radioactive hot potato, didn't they? And said, "There you go, off you go, go and put out a team against Liverpool in a kind of slightly no-win situation." Felt slightly sorry for him. I mean, he has got his coaching badges. He is a qualified manager, but he hasn't got any experience. And he's, you know, we'll talk about Frank, but he's inherited, you know, a team that is slightly beleaguered, slightly demotivated. You know, whose heads are probably spinning about what's happening with the new manager and where they fit in, and he's asked to go out there in front of a, you know, reasonably unsettled Chelsea crowd and put in a performance. No, it was really, really tough for the guy. I felt quite sorry for him, but, you know, he acquitted himself reasonably well, I thought.
Yeah, and Gary, do you think it must have been tough, mustn't it? He's Potter's man, and you can't imagine that he wanted to be there. I should imagine they had to almost beg him to stay for a few more days, especially when he knew he was the first dead man walking of the week, because he knew that come Wednesday he'd be gone and Frank would be taking over, because apparently they were getting things in place, weren't they? And I guess they must have just run out of time to get a contract sorted out with Frank.
Yeah, I feel for him, but at the same time, that's football, isn't it? And he made it very clear that he was just heading up the committee. So he was the face of the committee that he spoke about with Jeff Shreve, sorry. No, who is it? Is it Jeff Shreves or Jeff Shreve? Who does the interview?
Jeff Shreves.
So it was just a messy situation for a few days, but that's football. They get their payoff.
Gary, can I ask you something that you just picked up on something? The word committee. Does the word committee in association with football teams sound like a very worrying word indeed?
Yeah, it does. I don't know what he was getting at when he said it twice, didn't he? And he's in. I guess you two were at the game. I wasn't, because I'd given my ticket up for someone to go, and so I watched all the pre-match build-up with interest, and. He said it a couple of times in the interview. Jeff Shreve said to him, did you pick the team? Because what happened the day before, Andy Dillon of that much-loved Red Top, The Sun, had basically poked fun at Bruno, which I thought was a bit out of order, because, you know, there's a guy who's sort of stepping into the breach and you're prodding him for a headline, which is typical. excuse me. And so the next day, the headlines were, "I've never picked a team before." So, obviously, you know, Jeff Shreves has got to ask that question. Did you pick the team? And then he didn't answer it. And he said about the committee. And then he went back to him again and said, "Did you pick the team?" And he said, I can't remember the exact quote, but he basically just said, "Yeah, we picked the team by committee, because a committee picks the team." Don't know what that means.
No, it's confusing. Andy, what do you make of the word committee? And is it a word we hope we never hear again?
I think it's a disastrous word in this context. You know, cricket, for example, have a selection committee where they have three or four people who are selectors, and it's their job to, you know, to give the team to the captain, who is, I think, part of the committee as well. But that's a very different dynamic. I mean, in football, I think you've got to have a manager picking a team. What worries me is the owners a little bit, and their presence on the touchline at training. You know, not so much Bowley, but this guy Igbali, I don't know an awful lot about him, but it seems like he's got his fingers in all sorts of areas that he probably shouldn't as an owner. I don't know, I'm speculating, but, you know, from what I see and what I hear and the photos that I see, he seems to be very involved in this type of stuff, and that nothing good ever comes of that situation. And so I don't like the word committee. Maybe he just meant that he'd taken advice off some people within his team, or, you know, he'd taken soundings, and ultimately that's how the team get together. But you should never pick a football team by committee.
I think he said we picked the team together.
Yeah.
So I'd have to go back and listen to it, but I remember listening to it thinking, whoa, yeah, that doesn't sound good. But Igbali watching training with Bowley, I'm not really concerned about that. Roman used to do it all the time. You'd be at the training ground, you'd hear a helicopter come in, and then he'd be stood next to you watching training.
It's pure speculation, but you know, just something about it feels a bit off to me. But maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe he's just there because he likes watching training.
Well, he's certainly the power broker. Yeah. People think it's Todd Boehly. Todd Boehly's the front man. Egbali's the money.
Exactly.
Do you think, okay, Gary, do you think this last week or so has really exacerbated the thinking on how problematic a period this is for Chelsea, and that actually our owners obviously have got good intentions but maybe feeling their way, and it's all happening too quickly for them to really understand the football game over here and get, I'm sure they wanted to have an easier season than they're having, so they can feel their way through, oh, okay, this works, that doesn't work. Now there's a real spotlight on them, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there was from the outset anyway, wasn't there? But I think what you're seeing with them is they've got the desire and the ambition, so you can't criticise them for that. You know, how many owners get criticised for having no ambition? I just think that some of it's been misplaced. They've come in wide-eyed, they've taken the club over in dramatic circumstances, everything happened so quick, and they've tried to sort of play catch-up really quick as well, realising what they had inherited and what they had purchased. And it's all just gone, I wouldn't say horribly wrong, but it's just not gone as smoothly as people would have hoped. But then you look at it and you think that you've changed manager twice now. You've signed, how many players was it? 15 players?
Yep.
And you look at the Liverpool game before the Wolves game. Six of those players weren't at Chelsea, who started, six weren't at the club last year. Three of them weren't at the club in January. That's incredible. And you think about it just in terms of, regardless of function and style, we always say that when this, and I guess we'll get onto this with the Wolves game, when this team goes 1-0 down, they sort of look at each other and they don't know what to do. And we criticise the character for that. But then I think an element of it comes to it of almost they're in the trenches and they look at the guy opposite them and they think, I've just met you, I don't know how you're going to react and prop me up. And they just haven't got that affinity with players yet. So I think it's just been this whole, we said it last week about when the manager left, I think it's just been collective failure.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely
just
right.
Across the board.
And Andy, do you think what we're seeing in the performances, and we've talked about this before, this lack of leaders in there is proving to be a real issue. Look, we've got fantastic hot prospects. We've got fantastic potential. But we don't have, with Thiago Silva being out, we don't have, other than Kante, that many seasoned pros. You know, Kovacic looks to me as though he's struggling to get a hold of his game and what his role is going to be in this side anymore. Cesar Azpilicueta, we're not seeing much of him because of that injury, and actually doesn't really figure in the squad now. So really, all you've got is Kante, who's coming back from injury. And he looks head and shoulders above everyone from what we've seen against Liverpool.
Yeah, it's interesting, the leaders that we've talked about this for years, Kerry. Yeah, it's not just this season. We've talked about it for the last 4 or 5 years, really. About,
but it's
this,
coming
this
home act. To roost.
It really is, yeah. I mean, you've got Kovacic, who's the captain, and you know, he's clearly a well-respected, experienced player. I don't think he's a captain. You know, the player that really leads by example seems to be Enzo. He seems to be playing with an energy and a passion and a commitment that is, you know, above everybody else, until Kante came in and did the same. You know, you look across that back line at the moment, or certainly the back line that played against Liverpool, Cucurella, Fofana, and Koulibaly, none of them are really leaders. Reece James, he leads by example, but he's not really a leader. Chilwell, I don't think, is either. Felix is a new boy, he's not going to be captain. Havertz, I mean, it's like, you know, I don't see anybody there that's really going to galvanise the team beyond Enzo. And he doesn't speak English and he's a new boy. So it's very difficult, really. I think we all hoped that Mason Mount might come in and assume that mantle and be the sort of figurehead of the team. But I guess we can talk about Mason, you know, separately. But there isn't anybody there that feels like a natural born John Terry type leader, even though he was an exceptional outlier. You know, there's nobody in there that you really think, you know, is someone that can kind of, you know, take the team by the nose and lead them.
So, Gary, this is a problem that's been going on for a long time now. This isn't just new ownership. This isn't just the last year. I've got a weird theory, which, of course, I know scares all of you. But it's almost like from the moment Abramovich never got that golden visa, which allowed him to live here, it's almost as though part of the club became neglected and we fell into decline, and that actually we are now no longer a consistent side. We're kind of back to a side from the 90s where we've become a cup side. Is that far-fetched, this thinking, or do you think there's something in it?
Maybe a little bit, but then I think you look at some of the decisions that were made where people running the club didn't make the best decisions. There was the bad appointment of Sarri, which set us back. Then you had a transfer ban as well. I think they failed to plan ahead for some transfers as well, which they knew were going to happen, such as Courtois. They knew he was always going to Madrid, or at least that was his intention. That's what he wanted to do, and he forced that through. I just think collectively, since we won the title in 2017, so the last 6 years, it's just been collectively or progressively worse in certain stages, right? And I think it's right to call us a cup team now. People will probably throw their arms in the air and complain that we're saying that, but I think it's true. I think when you want to see a team, whether they're a good team or not, can they do it consistently in the league? And Chelsea can't. And that shows what they are.
Yeah, I think that's right. Andy, I mean, do you see us now as a potential cup side rather than a consistent championship challenging side?
I think we are at the moment. I don't think there's any doubt about that. That's a fact. Moving forward, I hope that given some time and given the right leadership, we can start to become more of a threat in the league. Next season, it looks like we're not going to be playing any midweek games. It looks like we're just going to be playing on Saturdays. We should have a little bit more time to prepare. We'll hopefully have a new manager who can give us an identity that we lack at the moment. We may make a couple of significant signings in the summer for areas that we still desperately need. We spoke last week at length about, you know, the goal-scoring situation. We probably still need another central midfielder, and we probably still need a goalkeeper. So, you know, if we can get those situations sorted, if we can get a manager that comes in with energy and passion and commitment, gives us an identity, if we can get some leaders to step up within the team, if we can keep everybody fit and we don't play midweek football, there's no reason, I don't think, why we can't be there or thereabouts. It may not be next season, but I can't imagine, given the resources that we have, that it'll be that far away. I think this is hopefully an anomaly of a season where too many things have happened and we've been overwhelmed by circumstances. But I think once we figure it out, we should get back on track. I'm going to take the positive view of it.
Fair enough. All right, well, look, I'm going to take the positive view that we are going to a commercial break. And when we come back, we will discuss the arrival of Frank Lampard and then his first game in charge. Back in a minute.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we're back. Right, okay, we've got to discuss it. Frank comes back. Is he a super saviour? Is it a strange decision for him to make? Is it the perfect marriage to see out a poor season that actually would just go, oh yeah, but it's Frank, the results won't matter, we know we're on a hiding to nothing this week against Real Madrid. Does this take the pressure off and buy the owner some time? What do you think, Gary?
Well, I don't think there's any pressure on him. Not this season. Look, we said this last week. I don't think they should have sacked the manager. Not because I think he's a great manager. Or they should have just kept him on to the end of the season. Did what Roman did with Ranieri. Kept him as a dead man walking. And then he knew that he wanted him gone. And he made him see out that season. And then they brought in Jose, right? I think they should have just kept Potter in position. What is going to change with Lampard? He can't sign anyone. He's got the same problems that Potter had. He can come in and get everyone riled up a little bit and, you know, to go for the last, you know, 10 games of the season. But the league's done. We're not going to get top seven. I don't want us to either. I don't want us to. I want us to be out of Europe next year. I don't want us to be high up in the table. I want us to, you know, we had an amazing opportunity in 2016 that Conte took and used to his benefit, right? But then in that summer after, we failed to build on it. And then we let all the politics destroy the club. And then we had that terrible season that sort of put us back where we were when Conte came in. So that's my reasoning. And I saw someone said, oh, Gary can't get over Potter being sacked. Whatever. Look, I'm not tied to Graham Potter. I'm not like a Graham Potter apologist or whatever you want to label me as. I just think that trying to be sensible, they should have just looked at it. That's what they had and just thought, this looks bad if we do this. Because if you're another manager looking at Chelsea coming in, what are you getting? But then to bring it up to Frank, I love the fact that, yeah, okay, Potter's gone, but I love the fact Frank Lampard's back at Chelsea. I will sing on Saturday against Brighton. I will sing for the first time this season because I absolutely love him. And he can come in and we can finish 11th or we can drop down to 15th in the table. I do not care because from the cock-up of sacking Potter, or we could even go back to the cock-up of sacking Tuchel, wherever you want to look at it, we get to finish the season with Lampard as manager. And after he got sacked after the Luton FA Cup game, that happened during COVID football and the fans didn't get an opportunity to see him. And we do now, you know? So I love Frank Lampard and I'm glad he's back at Chelsea.
Andy, is this a win-win situation or is there anything that could go horribly wrong for Frank just by taking this appointment for the end of the season? He's kind of intimated that possibly, maybe I could have the job next year. Slight intimation.
Look, it sounds kind of weird to say, but Gary talks a lot of sense. I think he's right in the sense. Look, after the Villa game, I was done. I was absolutely cooked on Graham Potter. It's like, this is awful and toxic and terrible. And, you know, I did call for his head. I didn't see the Frank Lampard curveball coming at all. So let me make my situation with Frank very clear. I love Frank Lampard as a player. I think he's my favourite ever player at Chelsea Football Club. I think he's an incredible icon of the club. Here's the thing. I don't think he's a very good manager. And everything I've seen of his management career so far says to me, he's not an elite manager. So I can understand why he's coming back to Chelsea as a PR exercise, frankly, to kind of lower the temperature, to give the fans something to distract them, to make them feel good about themselves, you know. And you know, as Gary says, I'll sing his name because I love Frank Lampard, but he's not going to achieve anything in the next 8 games or whatever's left, you know, unless by some miracle we beat Real Madrid. And football's a weird old game. It might happen. You never know. You know, look how close Avran Grant came to winning the Champions League. You know, Roberto Di Matteo won the Champions League with us. It's not beyond the absolute realms of possibility that we can do that, but it would be a miracle. So I don't think that Frank is necessarily going to achieve anything in the games that he has for us. But I can understand why it's been done, and I can understand, and I'm, you know, and I share the fans, you know, sort of happiness that, you know, we've got someone who's one of our own on the line. But, you know, does it work for anybody long term? I don't think so. I think it's very interim. Can't see Frank getting the job long term, and I don't think I want him to either. That's my view on it.
And I have to say, well done for actually even getting the word frankly in when you were talking about Frank. Brilliant. So, Gary,
Gary, don't want to interrupt you, but would you want Frank to have the job long term, Gary?
Silence from his number one fan.
No, because the problem is that I don't think I'm educated enough to give the response because I know the response I'll give, and it's
emotional.
It's not based on fact or
And so emotion,
give me Frank Lampard as Chelsea manager.
So emotionally, emotionally, like him back. But if you were to take a step back and reflect on it, would you think that was a good idea?
This is why football fans don't run football clubs, isn't it?
Yeah, because we'd run with our hearts, not our heads. So
If I had my way, I'd have Frank Lampard manager. I'd have Jody Morris assistant. I would have Joe Edwards in there, Chris Jones. I'd have John Terry in there.
Ashley Cole.
I'd have Drogba as the striker coach.
Maybe we could
I'd have Cech as the goalkeeper coach.
Why don't we have one player for each position coach? Let's just have the whole...
I'm a bit like Matthew Harding, what my dream 11 would be.
Hayes. Well, there's enough of you. We said that last week.
But look, there is... As football fans, why do we love our club, right? We love it on emotion, not logic. And if I would much rather fail with Frank Lampard as manager than fail with somebody who's there because it's a good job.
All right,
should
Gary.
Should failure... Sorry, Kirk, because I am interested in this. Last week you didn't get a word in edgeway, so we'll try and stop that. But I'm just fascinated by this because, emotionally I'm with you. I think I can compartmentalise heart and head a little bit. You know, maybe I can do that, you know, and I just think that with my heart, it would be brilliant, wouldn't it, to have, you know, people that were completely blue to the core and committed to it on the touchline running things. But should failure ever be the objective? I think
I don't think it's got to be victory, the objective.
It's got to be victory.
Yeah, this is the thing, though, is like, you know, I look back at supporting Chelsea, growing up with my brothers, going to watch it with my dad. And what the days that I loved the most, you know, Munich was great. I wasn't there, but it was great experiencing. I've been there watching us lift league titles. And I remember the reason I got out of journalism was the day that we won the title against West Brom when Batshuayi scored. I was in the press box at the Hawthorns and I was looking over at the fans. I was like, why aren't I happy? I don't want to be here. I want to be over there. I don't want to be doing this. And I just think about the times that I've loved watching Chelsea the most, and I know I'm talking about Chelsea winning something there, but when you think about it, and this is an experience I've had doing the blueprint, is that my best days of supporting Chelsea in the 90s. Nothing's going to compare to it. Going to watch Zola score his first goal for Chelsea, watching Viali get that header against Everton, you know, watching Chelsea bringing in all these new players when it was exciting and we weren't expecting anything and winning things. That's what endeared me to Chelsea, not winning the Premier League.
Because of what they did in your formative years. That's when you're...
And that's what I love about the club. You know, I was brought up on the six memorable matches video. I didn't get the opportunity, the privilege of watching Peter Osgood play, but they're people that make Chelsea, right? So, look, logic says you don't have Frank Lampard as manager next season. But, you know, I love Chelsea for the culture and the people at the club. I've never loved Chelsea because we're winning things. I want to win things. Don't get me wrong, I want to win things. But I'd much rather try to win things with Frank Lampard as manager than try to win things with someone that we bought in from Germany because he wears ankle swingers and white trainers.
Okay, the discussion could go on and on about Frank stays, Frank goes. We just all love him. So he always gets some time. In fact, if he lost every game till the end of the season, would I still love Frank Lampard? Absolutely 100%.
Well, he's going to make me sing until the last game of the season.
I know, that's really shocking because I've heard you sing in a studio and you're awful.
So I'm going to be drowning the place out.
All right, well, look, let's get to just touch on the game against Wolves. Do you think, Andy, that all the training sessions you can do with players, you never know till you're out on the pitch? And OK, you had two training sessions with him. But did that Wolves game, do you think it was a shock to the system for Frank to see, as he talked about, there was no aggression in the side? That was the first word he used, more than anything else, that they need some steel, which was that side. You know, do you think it was a rude awakening for Frank when he saw how far away they are from the kind of side he would like?
Well, presumably he's been watching the games this season. He was in the stands at the Liverpool game. I mean, he's seen this. It can't have been that much of a shock to him, I don't think. I was kind of interested in the formation that he picked. He went 4-3-3, I think. And I just thought that was interesting, you know, to change the system you know, from day one without kind of like, you know, having any kind of transition period into it. I don't think it worked. And I just thought it was an interesting call from Frank Lampard. Of course, there's no aggression in the side. We know this. They're a beleaguered, demotivated side for whatever reason. You know, they just don't have any confidence or belief. But I don't think that's a surprise to him. I think what he's been brought in to do is inject a little bit of passion, to stand in the dressing room and say, this is Chelsea Football Club. You need to go out there and represent the shirt, represent the fans. He's been brought in to do that. I don't think it's an easy job. I think, you know, there's a rehabilitation process he needs to do with these players to get that belief back. A lot of them have come in from, you know, other leagues and other situations with big price tags. You read these stories about this massive squad and people having to sit on the floor because there's no room and people not having lockers and too many people in the training sessions. I mean, it is all a bit of an overwhelming mess. And Frank coming in and giving a, you know, we will fight them on the beaches speech, it's not as easy as that, you know, even though I'm sure that's what he's doing. I don't think it's as easy as that. So is he shocked by it? I doubt it. Is he disappointed by it? Probably. Does he need to find a strategy to somehow get a tune out of this side? Absolutely. You know, I don't know what more to say than that.
No, okay. So we could talk about Wolves all day long. It was another one of those games. Yeah, the stats could tell you we had a lot of shots, but the truth is we only had one on target and a lot of flailing shots. It was poor. It's the same old problem with not scoring goals. Gary, we're looking ahead to Madrid. We should just have a quick chat about Madrid. How does he get them to do something? How does he make them work? Can he do something against Real Madrid? Is it going to be a classic case of this side will start performing against a better side as usual?
Oh, well, he'll play Kante for one, won't
he? Yeah, of course. He's resting him, isn't he?
Yeah, I do think as well that maybe that's where the shoddy performance against Wolves has come from. I mean, there's no aggression and whatnot because they've definitely got both eyes on Wednesday. They're not, you know, they're not bothered about Wolves on Saturday. Chelsea are firmly top of the bottom of the table, and they'll get enough points to probably finish top of the bottom half of the table. With the games that are remaining in the season. But what you look at it again and you think, why would they be going all out to get a performance against Wolves? There's no need for them to do it. What does it get them? They move to 10th? They wouldn't even move to 10th, would they, if they'd won? They would have still been stuck in 11th because they are in a league of their own. So I don't think you can look at Wolves and put it onto Madrid. Just like you can't look at the fact that Madrid lost to Villarreal at the weekend. You know, but what do they have one eye on, you know, at the weekend? So I'd like to think they're going to come out because this is their season. We said about Dortmund, didn't we, when that second leg came up. This was the season. So you'd like to think they're going to come out and give a lot more. Obviously, it's not just about, you know, blood and guts, but you need a bit of that. And they're going to need a lot of it in the Bernabeu. So I think it's going to be a different performance. I think we will be a better performance. Whether it's one that's enough to win and it's going to be a marked improvement, I don't know. But it's going to be a lot. It's got to be a lot better than what it was on Saturday, surely.
And you would say, wouldn't you, Andy? He's right. Kante starts. They're obviously protecting him. You know, if that was the last game of the season he plays against Madrid, at least they got him to there. But hopefully they fixed this injury. The other one who seemed to, you know, didn't start, which I found surprising, but again, probably protecting him for Wednesday, Ben Chilwell, who, interestingly, it looks as though he's about to sign a new deal at Chelsea, which is good news for everyone, with the stories of City sniffing around. How important do you think Ben Chilwell has been since he's come back? He's possibly our player of the year, and he only came back in February.
Yeah, well, again, I think that's really important. He only came back in February after a very serious injury. Just can't play him game after game after game after game. But I think Gary's right. We've got both eyes on Wednesday. You know, Chilwell will be back. I think Kante will definitely be back. And we might see a few other surprises in there as well. And it's important. I would say as well, this is our season here. But after yesterday, we have another massive game this season against Arsenal. And we could stop them winning the league. You know, the way it's going at the moment, that draw that Liverpool got at Arsenal yesterday puts it firmly in Man City's hands. If we beat Arsenal, we could stop them winning the league. You know, for me...
And we play City as well, remember? So we could gift City the title.
Exactly.
So we could have done Tottenham, all those years ago, and then do Arsenal. Oh, that, carry on. Sorry,
beautiful.
Andy. Beautiful.
You know, Arsenal have got a... listen, I don't want to go on about Arsenal, but, you know, and we, none of
no,
us
I love
want,
it.
Want them to win the league, right? You know, they've got us, City and Newcastle in three games. You know, it's tough for them. If we can beat them, it could be one, another battle of the bridge. So there's that. That's a slight side issue. But, yeah, I mean, listen... could we beat Madrid? Yeah, of course we could. We can win any football game. Any team can win any football game on the day. You know, it just needs a little bit of luck and a little bit of belief. And, you know, we go over there, we get a draw, we bring it back to the bridge, under the lights, big atmosphere. We've done it before. Napoli, Benfica, you know, that crazy season in 2012. We've done it before. You know, we can do it. Am I completely ruling it out? Absolutely not. It's unlikely, but I'm not ruling it out. And I think Gary's right. This is the season, not Wolves. Away, this is the season right here. So, you know, if Frank Lampard can get this team up and get them focused and instill that in them, you know, then you know, who knows what could happen? It could be an incredible end to the season.
Okay, so let's get to prediction time. So we've got Real Madrid, and then at Saturday 3 o'clock. Shows what happens when you're not playing that well. How many more 3 o'clock on a Saturday games you get. So, yeah, let's have a prediction for both those. Gary, you may go first on Real Madrid.
See, this is where I show my true colours, right? Frank Lampard's Chelsea manager again. So the doom and gloom changes. Real Madrid 1, Chelsea 1.
Okay, I like that. Andy, over to you.
I'm exactly the same. I think it'll be a draw. And I think we'll bring it back to the bridge with all to play for. No away goals, obviously, anymore. So it doesn't matter if we get a draw. I'm going to go 1-1-2.
Okay, I'm going to go for 0-0. I think it's going to be extraordinary. Okay, Brian.
If we get a draw and we set out, it's going to be a hell of a night at the bridge. Oh. Hell of a night. You know, it really is. So, you know, be bouncing. So. Me singing Super Frank as he comes out.
Crying.
Can you film that for me, Gary, when you're sitting there, Kerry, when you're sitting
there? Oh, big time. Oh,
make sure you film it. Tourist. Yeah. Tourist.
Tourist cries at football.
I'll have my shades on, you won't see.
I'll rip them off.
You won't see if you've got your shades on.
He never does. He's got no idea what goes on. Brighton, then we get
singing
the reality.
Along to the Pretender before the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, yeah, Foo Fighters.
Gary's sitting there going, it's too loud.
Foo Fighters are
well, so I always get alerts on my watch going, because I've actually got really bad hearing. I'm deaf in one ear and my other ear's messed up. And I always get alerts on my watch going, you need to leave. The decibels went too high,
really?
Leave. Yeah.
That's genius.
I know. And I'm just like, nah, I'm staying for this.
Brilliant.
All right. Brighton result. What do we think? This is going to be a reality check. Andy, back to normality of don't care game.
I'm going to go for another draw. I'm going to go another 1-1. Sorry, boring. But I think that, you know, Frank can probably, you know, get a draw out of this. You know, I think that's the, you know, that would be reasonable.
Okay, and Gary, what's your thoughts?
2-1 to Chelsea.
Okay, I'm going to go for 2-2. But there we go. Right, well, that's it. We are out of time. That's it. I'm going bottle kicking. And, yeah, we will see you all next week. Thank you, as always, Andy. Thank you, Gary. That's been a pleasurable experience today. Enjoy the rest of your Easter and the rest of the week. And we will be back next week. Until then... keep the blue flag flying high.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.